This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Severed Angel, the deluxe edition of the self-titled debut album, available now. Pick up your copy today over at severedangel.com. Available on all streaming media platforms. Severed Angel, get ready to ride the dogs of war.
Welcome to Screams from the Grave. We're back.
Finally.
Yes. Lou Mavs joined by the great Greg Noggle. How are you, sir?
I'm excellent. How are you?
Good. So, I think a little context. We haven't done a Screams from the Grave episode in, I can't remember when. And, you know, one day Greg and I were having a conversation. We're like, why don't we bring it back? I'm like, I didn't realize it was gone. So... And this was always been one of my favorite parts about doing Rat Style Review is discovering bands that I've never heard of or going back and discovering lost gems. And this episode, we're actually going to concentrate on a band that Greg recommended, who released one EP and two full lengths in the 80s. And I had never heard of this band, but I'm glad Greg turned me on to them. And hopefully some of you out there know who they are. This band from Germany by the name of Cutty Sark. So, Greg, you take over because you're the subject matter expert on Cutty Sark. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to call them the incomparable Cutty Sark, but they were a German band that formed around 1977, 1978, and they ended up independently releasing their EP in 83, Hard Rock Power, which got the attention of Mausoleum Records, who then re-released the EP and then gave them the opportunity to do two full-length albums. And then after that, to be quite honest, you know, I've been planning this for a while. I've been trying to find information, even asking musicians I know in Germany. Couldn't find any of the members and couldn't really find anything about the band other than they disbanded after their third album and eventually did a reunion album in the late 90s, but nobody seems to know anything. But what always enthralled me about them is they were a real good hard rock and heavy metal band, but they didn't take that easy route at the time and emulate either Scorpions or Accept, who were arguably the two biggest names in Germany then during that time period.
Right. And this is before Destruction, Creator, and Sodom.
Yeah. And it's even before the Teutonic power metal type stuff.
Oh, Halloween.
Well, I was thinking more Storm Witch, Gravedigger, Ostrogoth, which I would say they arguably have more in common with than Halloween. And one of the cool things I thought about them was they took influences from kind of everywhere, everything that was going on at the time. Like the first EP, Hard Rock Power, is very primitive, and you can hear some AC/DC even in there. And on the later ones, as they grew into more complex songwriting and playing new wave or British heavy metal type stuff, even Maiden-esque and Judas Priest with some of the guitar lines. But although they took that opportunity to grow, I would argue that they really didn't sound like anybody else. I mean, they were very much of that heavy metal time period, but they didn't go out of their way to be like a Judas Priest Jr. or something like that.
They didn't, but I could definitely hear sort of a heavy influence of, I would say, Point of Entry era type Judas Priest, which I mean that as a compliment because I love that album. I definitely heard a little Diamond Head, Lightning to the Nations type influence on there in terms of like the catchiness of their hooks. When we go into each album, I actually said, you know, it's funny, Anvil is the band that people say should have been great but never had the chance. I say Cutty Sark sounds like a band that should have been great, but no one's ever heard of them.
Exactly.
And it's like, that's really unfair because this is some pretty good stuff. So,
oh, it is. It's catchy. And, you know, as they move along, as we talk about the albums, it builds in emotion. And dude, the songs are really beautifully crafted, even on the original EP, Hard Rock Power.
Pretty much. I mean, like, for an album that pretty much sounded like it was recorded on little to no budget, the songwriting skill is there. And, you know, me as a guitarist and a songwriter, that's of the most important factors for me liking a band. You know, I mean, all the skills in the world are great, but if you can't write a song with your skills, you're not worth your weight in salt. So I definitely think Cutty Sark had that.
They definitely did. And, you know, Connie Schmidt, the vocalist, definitely very German, but also very unique.
Yeah, really unique. I was trying to think of who I could compare him to, and I was like, I really can't, you know? I mean, and I really tried very hard to stay away, to deviate from the Acceptance Scorpions comparisons, because obviously, you know, when you think of 70s, early 80s German hard rock metal, you can't help but think of those two. But, you know, sure. He didn't sound like Udo. He didn't sound like Klaus. He had his own style and swagger about him. I would say probably his voice, I wouldn't be surprised if it influenced more of like the American metal singers, which I'm sorry to say it, American metal bands, a lot of you did steal your shit from Germany. Let's face facts. Not all of you, but a lot of you did.
Oh, certainly. And as a matter of fact, you know, we can just start jumping into the first release, the Hard Rock Power EP right here. But the funny thing is, I have a lot of friends in Germany, and who I talked to about them kind of barely remembered, had this slight inkling of, yeah, you know, I think I remember seeing them opening for other bands, or I kind of remember Die Tonight, because which is funny because arguably Heroes, the third LP, is their most accomplished, I would say, songwriting wise. But I guess Die Tonight, the first full album, had more push from Mausoleum Records behind it, who admittedly was not a very good record label at all. But they actually released a single for Die Tonight. But anyway, everyone I know that loves them and has heard of them and says, oh yeah, you know, that first EP, that Hard Rock Power, that really influenced what we were doing when we started in the 80s, are all American bands.
Interesting. All right, cool. Well, let's start with the EP, Hard Rock Power. First track is the title track, Hard Rock Power. I thought it was a good opening track. I could picture hearing it at the local drive-in burger joint with fast cars and 80s girls. Good times. I wouldn't know. I was in my single digit ages in the 80s. Okay. I'm 42 now. Give me a break. I'm trying to be, you know, entertaining over here for you people. Anyway, music reminds me of, like I said, early 80s Judas Priest, more like Point of Entry era, obviously before Screaming for Vengeance. And I really liked it. Catchy chorus. And, you know, I think Uwe, the guitarist, definitely got better as a soloist with every release. But here you could tell he's still trying to find his voice. But, you know, I give him credit. He does a decent job.
Certainly. He does do a really good job. And it's funny how super catchy this song is. And as I was re-listening to all these and thinking about it, the title track specifically, I mean, I love that Primitive Power and how, while it is mostly hard rock, hang on, I got this written down here. You know, it's almost like one of those gut punch arena songs. But while they were also incorporating point of entry, Judas Priest is a good one into it. I feel it almost has like a AC/DC type arena rock element to it, where the Young Brothers, after Flick of the Switch, this is the direction they should have taken on Fly on the Wall. I mean, they out AC/DC the Young Brothers on this tune.
I did like the album Fly on the Wall, but I could see that. Fire and Ice, so far, great melodic chops. I mean, that's definitely their strong point.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good slow burner song, too, with the way it builds up. And, well, I mean, they formed in 77. This was 83, so obviously they had some time to work on it. And while it's not super complex, that's kind of the first inkling of them building like multi-emotional parts to a song, I feel like.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. And you know, there's a progression, you know, you definitely hear that. The Dice, this is probably my favorite track on the EP. Totally picks up the pace, and you know, you definitely hear the influence from New Wave of British Heavy Metal in here. And, you know, definitely unlike their contemporaries, because, you know, let's face it, at this point, Acceptance, Scorpions were at their more popular, most popular point, or at least they were on their way to major international breakout. They definitely hold their own on this track.
Oh, certainly. I mean, I would honestly, and it does have a big New Wave of British Heavy Metal sound to it. I'd put this right up there with what Diamond Head and Blitzkrieg were doing around that time period. It's my favorite song on the EP. I mean, it's just ferocious, and then it's super catchy on top of it too.
Yeah. And then the final track is Attack. I'm oddly enough, being that this came out in 83, a year before Power Slave, I was like, wait a minute. Did Maiden rip this off with 2 minutes to midnight? All right. So yeah, that's a yes. Regardless, I thought it was a killer closer.
I always wondered that, because the Peace of Mind tour was so big in Germany. I'm like, did Adrian Smith hear this at some point?
Considering that the final show of the Peace of Mind tour was the Westfalenhallen in Dortmund. Yeah. So yeah, probably. Adrian, if you're watching this, I love you. You're one of my heroes, but you know, we're just calling it as it is.
Yeah, totally. I love you, Adrian. But this is definitely something you file under things that make you go,
All right. Well, moving on from the EP, because it's four songs and we cover them, is their first LP called Die Tonight. And so apparently the song itself, the title track, was a single released in Europe?
It was. Die Tonight was released as a single on Mausoleum Records with, oh man, what was the B-side? I have to look here. I think it might have been Hands Up. It was either Hands Up or Vultures in the Air, but I feel like it was Hands Up.
Yeah, I'm familiar with Mausoleum Records because I know that in the 80s, they actually released a 5-song EP from the band GMT, which was Chris Glenn, formerly of Alex Harvey Tribute. You're nodding. You know it. Okay, cool. Former of the Alex Hardy Harvey Band, the Sensational Alex Harvey Band, Michael Schenker Group, and also with Robin McCauley, who would end up going to join Michael Schenker and MSG. The original drummer was Phil Taylor from Motorhead. That's what the GMT stands for. And they had a 5-song EP out called War Games. One of the songs actually made it onto the Classic Nukem High soundtrack. So that's how I first heard of Mausoleum. And also, if I recall correctly, I know they've released a lot of stuff. Some stuff that my friend Mike Torelli of Holy Mother was also on. So, you know, again, a situation of a label that had notoriety, but where was the funding?
Exactly. And a lot of metal labels were like that in the early 80s. I mean, you know, Neat Records out of the UK is you re- and remembered as one of like the leaders of the new wave of British heavy metal as far as physical releases went at the time on a major label, because there was a ton of tape trading. But they didn't put a lot of money or any real push behind most of their bands. I mean, you know, Venom, Welcome to Hell, that's the demo tape. They didn't remix it or anything. They just took the demo tape they gave them and put it. Not that Venom really learned how to play the instrument a couple of years later, but I do love Welcome to Hell. But how I discovered Mausoleum, though, was there was a band called Black Axe originally that released a, I want to say, just a single on Neat at the time, which was Highway Rider with a song called Red Lights on the B side. And through looking through a bunch of old magazines, I want to say it was Kerrang, I ended up finding out they changed their name to Wolf a few years later and finally had their debut released on Mausoleum Records. Mm. And that's how I found the record label and started going back through everything from there. And eventually we'll probably do that Wolf album too, because I really liked that one.
Cool. So starting with the opening track on Die Tonight, a song called Stupid Lies. How do you top your previous opening track? You blast the doors down and deliver the killer track Stupid Lies. How they were not represented by a bigger label like a Metal Blade or a Road Racer or even Noise is beyond me. People could say Anvil is the band does it for greatness that missed their chance. I'm just repeating myself again, but I think it's important to notice. I think this could have been the band destined for greatness that the world missed out on.
Oh, certainly. I agree 100%. I mean, this is a full-blown metal classic, really. Stupid Lies is just a barn burner. Then you go into the title track, which is great. It's catchy. Vultures in the Air, which progresses through different feelings, you know?
And you have the vinyl, I see. And
yep.
Unfortunately, this material is out of print. It's being hidden by the blue screen. That's okay. But he does have it. Unfortunately, the stuff's out of print. And, you know, you could probably find it for not a cheap price on Discogs or Amazon. But, you know, we'd prefer you go to Discogs. Don't give Jeff Bezos any more money. Anyway.
Well, if you're looking for them, the two albums, Die Tonight and Heroes. If you don't want the vinyl, they were re-released on CD in 2019 for a pretty affordable price. But even if you're going after the albums, you can get them all around 19 to 27 bucks or so.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. But you got to pay for that shipping from Europe.
And we know that ain't cheap. Track two, Die Tonight, the title track. All right. Now, when I say this, I mean this as this could have been such a metal classic that mainstream fans should know about. I think this is a song so good that Accept could have done it.
Yeah,
like it's on par with anything Accept has done.
It certainly is. I mean, it would have been right at home on, even though it was later than this album, but Metal Heart. And quite frankly, if you want to talk, even though it was before, but Priest hits from British Steel, you know, Living After Midnight or, oh God, what was the other song? I'm drawing a blank. Breaking the Law.
Mm-hmm.
Just as catchy and musically better than those, really.
Yeah, I mean, I liked British Steel, but I'm definitely burnt out on it. But this was definitely refreshing for me. Vultures in the Air. I was not expecting this. It feels like Point of Entry era Priest having a love child with Dio era Sabbath and giving us this gem. There's just something about Uwe's guitar work on it that I was like, I was not expecting it. I just feel like it came completely out of left field. And I can assure you, I think this is definitely the best song on the album. It's my favorite.
It's my favorite as well. I'd put it right up there. We're with Children.
Two for two now, Greg.
That's crazy. Yeah.
We did not discuss this before we went on camera, by the way.
Nope, not at all. Yeah, but I mean, it comes out at you with just that emotion to it and that complexity yet catchiness of something like Children of the Sea from Heaven and Hell.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking more Sign of the Southern Cross. I don't know why, but like I definitely got, you know, vibes of that from this track.
Oh, sound wise, I would definitely agree with you. I just feel it's a little more dynamic, like Children of the Sea is. I mean, Sign of the Southern Cross is a good tune, but it doesn't quite hit all those different notes that Children of the Sea does.
Fair enough. Next track, Jam to the Ramp. I'm going to flat out say I'm really mad at myself for not knowing about Cutty Sark sooner.
I mean, this is like the perfect tune to go skateboarding to, you know?
Possibly, yeah.
Yeah.
Next track, Hands Up. These guys do driving fast hard rock very well. I'm convinced that they are like the German equivalent to Diamond Head. Just killer music that it's sad that you only hear about their greatness from other like-minded fans. Like, it saddens me that you'll never hear about them in the mainstream press. I mean, fuck Rolling Stone anyway, but like, you know, if they said 10 best German bands of all time, and I don't think that Cutty Sark would even be a footnote on there, and I think that's disgraceful. Not that I really care about Rolling Stone, but, you know, it's obvious they don't do their research.
It, totally. I mean, like the German bands I was talking about before, especially on the song Hands Up, you can totally hear what Stormwitch took from it, and you'll always see Stormwitch on the list of top bands, but I don't even think Cutty Sark got mentioned in Kerrang, which is just a shame because Uwe's guitar playing is just amazing, and I love Connie's vocals. I mean they get so haunting on this release. They up the ante crazily.
You know, if we ever get Mick Wall back on Rod Stewart Review, I'd like to ask him about Cutty Sark, because, you know, his knowledge of bands at the time, it, to this day, it's still so immense. Like, you know, just his memory on things. And Manny and I had a great time interviewing him, but I'd like to ask him if he remembered Cutty Sark.
That'd be awesome, actually. I would love to hear his opinion, and I hope he does remember them.
Yeah. although you did admit on the show that you did a lot of the blow back then, sir, so I hope your memory's still intact. Nah, Mick is cool. I love that guy. October Holidays, what a great instrumental track, and I have to give credit to whoever produced this, the rawness of it. It just makes it work perfectly. And you know, as I mentioned, Uwe's soloing is not the greatest, but you know, for the songs, he does a great job. And by the time the third album comes, you hear such great improvement and confidence in his skills as a lead guitarist. As a songwriter and a riff writer, 10 out of 10 for me.
Oh, certainly. And even though the solos might not be quite the complexity they are on the next album at this point, he really matches the mood and plays for the song well here.
Yes.
Which is one thing I will say, though I try to avoid comparisons to Scorpion's Uric, except he really does remind me of Ulrich Roth here on this album a lot, because he met not in his playing style, but how he matches the feel to the song. And it's not super flashy, but it's meaningful.
Definitely. Down and Out, I thought it was a filler track, okay at best.
Yeah, this is the one tune on here I really am not a big fan of. I want to say so badly I love everything on this album because it is such a good record. This song's just kind of there. It's not bad, but you're not going to remember it, really.
No, but the next track, the final track on the album, Burning to Ashes, it kind of reminds me of this band out of Canada called White Wolf. They had a song called Standing Alone, and I immediately took to it because I'm a really big fan of that song. So I really liked it. If there's anyone out there that remembers White Wolf. They were a Canadian band. I think they were out of Alberta, but yeah, I mean, really good track to close the album with.
Oh yeah. I actually, it's funny. I didn't even think of White Wolf, but you're right.
Oh, God.
But that's one of my favorite songs on the record too. It's a great closing track.
Yep. And moving on to that is their second full-length album, their final of the 80s, an album called Heroes. All right. Now, like, this is what I ask for out of bands that I listen to. Please progress on your next album. You don't have to get more technical. You don't have to get, you know, with the times. You don't have to, you know, sound like every other band that's out there at the time. Just become better at your craft, which first and foremost, primarily should be songwriting. And Jesus Christ, does it shine here. Opening track, Firebird. Uwe's soloing and phrasing has improved greatly by this point. And Jesus, is this a face melter? You know, it's still a bit pitchy in some areas, but I can forgive it because the passion of the band itself overtakes any flaws that are there.
Certainly. You can tell they totally believed in this and they worked hard to do it. I mean, the improvement, even though both albums are great, just in the songwriting and in the playing ability is just amazing on this record. And I would put them right up there with Defenders, Era Priest, you know, as a band that should have been known, should have been out there touring the world, because Firebird is just as good as any of the singles that were out at that time.
Definitely. Next track is the title track, Heroes. You know, I have to admit, mid-paced songs seem to be their forte. This one's not a disappointment at all.
No, it's a very good track. Very catchy too, actually.
Yeah. Now, this is where I get snobby. I apologize in advance. Do Come True. Again, I hear a little Iron Maiden here with the opening riff sounding like Twilight Zone, but it's a bit of a boogie track, so I guess it's to be expected with that style of playing, and it rocks anyways.
It really does, but this is one of the few tracks on this album where I would definitely say the guitar lines are Maiden-esque.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah. It's like Maiden, you ripped us off, this time we rip you off.
Right. It's like, because that's how heavy metal was developing, though, you know, it almost sounds like they heard Power Slave. Hey, man, that's pretty.
Wait a second. Was ist los? Anyways. Next track, Smell a Rat. I dig this a lot. It's got a ferocity to it. There's consistency and improvement with the songwriting. And like I said, I think that's what any fan of a band would want.
This song should have been a single. This is some of my favorite soloing from him. It's catchy. And the vocals even get haunting on this a little bit. Connie really starts hitting some of them different notes.
Definitely. Now, Soul to Kill. I'm convinced Cutty Sark is the perfect soundtrack for an Italian Road Warrior knockoff exploitation film. And that is the highest compliment that I can give it, because I love me some Italian Road Warrior exploitation films.
It does. I mean, you're right. And it blows away pretty much any other tune in a lot of those movies.
Yeah, I mean, if I were to think of a song that people would know of, I'd almost compare it to Street Lethal by Racer X. And I love that track. So I love this track. Love The World Away. Now, if anyone is looking for Cutty Sark on streaming media, good luck finding it. This is the only track you'll be able to find. It's impossible. But that being said, I think this is better than most ballads that a lot of the bands in the 80s were known for and popular for. My exact notes were, I'm really impressed with Uwe's playing and tone. This is where I kind of hear similarities to Blackout era Scorpions. And I love that album. So again, that's a compliment, not a knock.
Oh, definitely. And I agree. And maybe it's just because it's a ballad. It's a very well crafted ballad and precise, like something Scorpions would have do during that era. And what was I? I was thinking more of Animal Magnetism originally, actually. That's what it was.
Well, it's early 80s, regardless, you know, it's like, but, you know, after their, you know, Love Drive came out, before they, you know, took the world over with No One Like You. So, yeah, I can see that. But next,
it really does a great job, I'm sorry, but does a great job of, again, just building the different moods and feels to the song. And if this would have been released as a single, I think it maybe not top the charts, but it certainly would have been high up there in the top 10, I think, on the hot rock charts in the 80s.
Yeah, I think that if there was a push behind it, it would have been up there with Vandenberg's Burning Heart, you know? Like, that's a song that they're still known for to this day. So, you know, I think if Mausoleum put some funding behind it, it could have rated along with it, sure. All right, that's the timer, so we got to wrap up this episode.
Okay.
So go through the next two songs. Invitation to Dance. Miggy Schmidt starts off the song with a machine gun sounding snare into a killer solo performance before kicking into high gear, showcasing a true face-melting metal track from Cutty Sark. My favorite track on the album.
I love it, but it's my second favorite. The last one is actually my favorite.
See, that's my least favorite. I thought Let's Go was my least favorite track on the album. finally, we don't agree.
Difference.
We're not a bunch of automatons on Rat Salad Review.
There's just something about Let's Go. I mean, honestly, as much as I like it, it probably is the most basic track on the whole album, but it's just... It's catchy. It moves along in that groove, and it just reminds me of a lot of the one-off new wave of British heavy metal singles.
That's fine. I personally thought that. I'm sorry. Were you done?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I thought that Burning to Ashes was a better closing track. I think if Invitation to Dance was a closing track, it would have been perfect. But you know, it's still a killer filler track. So. So that wraps up Cutty Sark, their 80s discography. Where are you, Cutty Sark? If any of you are out there and you watch this, contact us. We'd love to have you on Rat Salad Review.
Please do. I would love to talk to you guys. You are probably the greatest mystery out of any band that I've loved, because I can never find anything about Cutty Sark.
Well, we're hoping that whoever watches this, if you know something, hit up in the comments below and, you know, go to radstylereview.com, contact us that way, find us on social media. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Let's see if we can bring back some love for Cutty Sark, all right?
Definitely.
Thanks for watching this episode of Screams from the Grave. This is Lou Mavs. That's Greg Noggle. Like and subscribe. Thanks for watching. What?